We will move into item number 15, migratory waterfall seasons, briefing, public hearing, and decision. And Don, it's your floor.
Chair Smith,
a brief video from the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's an annual status report that they do regarding the status of waterfowl. And see if we can get this going here.
I'm going to make a proposal for a robo dex again. Not really.
In cooperation with the Canadian Wildlife Service and other state, provincial, and private conservation partners, the 60th Annual Waterfowl Breeding Population and Habitat Survey is now complete. This video gives a brief overview of habitat conditions and duck and goose population estimates across the survey area for the 2015 season. In May and June 2015, air crews flew across more than 1 million square miles of waterfowl habitat in large segments of the U.S. and Canada. Ground crews also surveyed a part of the same area to validate the aerial survey numbers. The air and ground crews worked with biologists from the Migratory Bird Program to summarize habitat conditions, determine breeding population estimates, and draft annual species reports. For more detail and insights from the survey crews, to access the waterfowl status report and other information about waterfowl management across North America, visit the flyways.us website. In general, conditions during the 2015 survey were characterized as average to above average moisture across most of the traditional and eastern survey areas. Despite an early spring over most of the survey area, habitat conditions during the 2015 survey were similar to or poorer than last year. In many areas, the decline in habitat conditions was due to average to below average annual precipitation, with the exception of portions of southern Saskatchewan and central latitudes of eastern Canada. The total pond estimate for Prairie Canada and the U.S. combined was 6.3 million, which was 12% below the 2014 estimate of 7.2 million, but 21% above the long-term average. Following a relatively mild winter, the U.S. prairies also recorded an early spring, although precipitation since last summer was average to mostly below average. Habitat conditions in Montana and the Dakotas declined relative to 2014, despite significant rainfall in May, which came too late to benefit most early nesting waterfowl. The total pond estimate for the north central U.S. was 2.2 million, which is 16% below the 2014 estimate, but 28% above the long-term average. Overall, population estimates for the majority of species of ducks remain steady for this breeding season. The total 2015 duck population estimate, excluding scoters, eiders, long-tailed ducks, mergansers, and wood ducks, is 49.5 million birds. This population estimate is similar to the 2014 estimate of 49.2 and is 43% higher than the long-term average. Estimated mallard abundance is 11.6 million, which is similar to the 2014 estimate and 51% above the long-term average of 7.7 million. Estimated abundance of gadwall is 3.8 million, which is 100% above their long-term average of 1.9 million. Abundance estimates for redheads is 1.2 million, 71% above their long-term averages. The canvasback estimate is 0.8 million, which is similar to their 2014 estimate and 30% above their long-term average. The blue-winged teal estimate is 73% above the long-term average of 4.9 million. At 4.1 million, green-winged teal are 19% above the 2014 estimate of 3.4 million and 98% above the long-term average. The combined Lesser and Greater Skoff estimate is $4.4 million and is similar to the 2014 estimate. This is 13% below the long-term average of $5 million. The American Wigeon estimate is $3 million, which is similar to last year's and 17% above their long-term average of $2.6 million. Northern Pintail numbers are slightly lower than last year and remain below their long-term average. Their estimate is $3 million, which is 24% below the long-term average of $4 million. Estimated abundance of American black dyes in the Eastern Survey area was 500,000, which is 11% below last year's estimate of 0.6 million and 13% below the long-term average. Good to excellent production was expected for goose and swan populations nesting in the western Arctic and Alaska due to the early spring there. Variable or average production was expected in the central and eastern Arctic, with average to below average production expected along the Hudson Bay and southern Baffin Island, where late ice and snowmelt occurred. Production of temperate nesting Canada geese from most of their North American range was expected to be average. 136,500 Pacific and 111,400 Atlantic brant were counted during the winter of 2015. These counts were 16% and 23% lower than last year, respectively. Atlantic brant have had low juvenile production for the past 3 years, and below average production was expected again in 2015. Breeding conditions were good on Bylot Island, and an average to above average fall flight is expected for greater snow geese. Many populations of lesser snow geese and Ross's geese remain elevated, despite efforts to reduce their overabundant populations. However, counts of light geese within the Pacific, Central, and Mississippi flyways during fall and winter surveys were 15% lower than last year. 1 million mid-continent greater white-fronted geese were observed during the fall of 2014, which was 29% greater than the last survey in 2012. A population of 479,000 Pacific greater white-fronted geese was predicted for the fall of 2015, which was 25% lower than last year. Estimates of the North Atlantic, Atlantic, and Eastern Prairie populations of Canada geese were similar to recent averages. Southern James Bay population and Mississippi Valley population breeding Canada goose numbers were down, with average or below average fall flights predicted. Estimated abundance of resident and giant Canada geese was 1 million within the Atlantic flyway and 1.6 million with the Mississippi flyway, and both were similar to last year. The estimated abundances of Aleutian and cackling Canada geese were 189,000 and 340,000 respectively. Fall flights of lesser, tappeners, and other central and western populations of Canada geese were expected to be similar to last year. 117,100 eastern and 56,300 western population tundra swans were counted during the winter of 2015, and these are 12% higher and 17% lower respectively than last year's indices. While this year's survey results were very favorable, when and where waterfowl will be encountered this fall depends on many factors. Food availability and conditions of water sources all influence local duck and goose abundance, distribution, behavior, and ultimately, hunter success. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service continues to monitor changes throughout the survey regions and is mindful of large-scale development changes and extreme weather, which may negatively impact duck production in the future. Conservation efforts continue to be important to ensure continued population stability of ducks and geese. Waterfowl hunters contribute directly to conservation efforts through the purchase of a migratory bird hunting and conservation stamp, known as the duck stamp. The purchase of habitat from duck stamp sales ultimately benefits both waterfowl and other birds. For more information about the duck stamp, annual habitat and waterfowl population surveys, and the exciting world of waterfowl management across North America, visit the flyways.us website.
Okay, lots of good news there. Conditions are still conditions have declined somewhat on the wetlands, but populations are still at fairly high levels. We had several record numbers of, in our counts throughout North America, and I'll show some other information from other areas important to our state. We're considering today in this agenda item three different WACs. The first one is the migratory waterfowl seasons, and it's 232, 28, 436. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is the authority for establishing the federal frameworks every year, and those frameworks prescribe the earliest opening and the latest closing dates, the maximum limits, the season length, and shooting hours. The states are, have discretion, in our case, through WACs. We can be more restrictive but not more liberal. We can prescribe the season timing, split seasons, and zones within the federal framework. So the federal frameworks were just established in late July after our flyway meetings. And there are quite a few steps in the approval of migratory bird seasons for framework changes for the federal framework. So for an example on the left there, if we want to propose a framework change, it needs to go through the Pacific Flyway Study Committee. SC there as the study committee or the technical committee, through their subcommittees, through the full committee, through the Pacific Flyway Council. And this year, Eric Gardner was the representative for the agency on the council and also to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Service Regulations Committee, that next box there. So they met in late July to develop the federal frameworks, and those go to the director, and then those are passed to the state commissions for action. If we have changes that I mentioned on the season timing, the zone splits, we have some flexibility in that, and we those just go from our agency and considered by the commission every year. Throughout North America, there are three different mallard stocks that are managed independently now. It used to be that we were all under one framework for mallard management, but we have increased survey efforts in the west here, and we have a separate management system for western mallards through the adaptive harvest management process, and that's through fairly complex models that have been developed to regulate harvest management. I won't spend too much time on this one. That just reflects what was covered in the video, but again, conditions are somewhat, they're still good this year, not as good as last year in most of the breeding areas. We had record counts in the total number of ducks and mallards. As far as our Washington breeding surveys, we do special surveys in April and May every year. This shows the survey transects that are flown by helicopter each year. We had an increase in the total number of ducks in those surveys, 9% this year, and that's up 11% over the previous years of the survey. And then for mallards, similar numbers to last year and 3% above the past average. So things are still pretty good. I think, you know, obviously if the drought continues, we'll see the, those numbers decline, but right now our breeding population numbers look good. And as far as our regulations for the Pacific Flyway, they're based on the Western mallard trends. And currently, the Western mallard population is defined as breeding populations in Alaska, California, and Oregon. We have been working to get our surveys and also British Columbia surveys included in the modeling. And we're starting that effort this year to revise those models. But in general, you can see a somewhat of a decline this year, slight decline in the overall mallard numbers, the top graph there. And it's mainly because of the decline in California, which is the lower graph. They had a 27% decline in their index because of the drought down there in California. And their number is 51% below the long term. So I mentioned the Western mallard model. Each year, a regulatory prescription is produced for the model, And you can see the shaded area there indicates that we're in the liberal mode again this year. And from our game management plan, the liberal framework is 107 days, 7 total ducks, 7 mallards, 2 hen mallards. And for east side and west side, we try to run those seasons as late as possible with that liberal season framework. For pintails, canvasback, and scop, again, those were covered in the video. But we have independent harvest strategies based on models for those species. So based on the breeding population number and other factors such as ponds, harvest, estimated recruitment, that's what determines our seasons for those species. And we also do special surveys for sea ducks in Puget Sound. We have a harvest management strategy that we've talked about in the past for sea ducks, and special regulations for mainly related to scoters. Here's the winter scoter index that we estimated from last January surveys. And you can see that the three-year average did increase slightly. So we've had a slow increase in that population since we put additional restrictions in a few years ago, down to 2 birds in the bag. So I wanted to get into the specific regulation proposals now. They're in your notebook. In general, the duck season dates and limits are similar to last year, the proposals, with the exception of canvasbacks. And the Fish and Wildlife Service, based on the models we're allowed, is allowing an increase in the canvasback bag from 1 to 2. So that's the first of 2 recommended adjustments in the packet. That's on page 3. That's already included in your packet, the increase to 2 canvasbacks. And also the possession limits would be increasing, too, along with that. All the other parts of the season, specific duck limits, 2 hen mallards, 2 pintails, 2 redhead, 3 scop, and then the scoter, longtail, and golden eye, and harlequin limits are all the same as last year, shown there. Sorry. And I wanted to get into the goose season proposals now and give you a little more information about geese in our areas. These are the Canada goose breeding trends, and in eastern Washington, we do a nesting survey every year. We've done that for many years, and you can see on that top graph there that we had an increase 14% this year, and it's 32% above the long-term average. These are the western Canada geese that breed in eastern Washington. And then on the west side, we also had an increase of 7%, and that's 40% above the previous counts there. So that both those populations are doing well, increasing. We may have an option to increase bag limits on those populations in the future. We're looking at that right now. Wrangell Island snow geese. This was a kind of a big surprise this year. There haven't been surveys done on Wrangell Island since 2011. These geese nest in eastern Siberia off the mainland of Siberia on Wrangell Island, and they come down the west coast of North America. A lot of them stay in the Skagit area. We have a population of about 65,000 in the Skagit-Fraser area. But the 2015 counts on Wrangell increased from 155,000 to 240,000, a huge increase, estimated 35 to 40% young. Very early production year, early spring there, and should be good news for hunters this fall with that many juveniles in the population. And so I wanted to get into the goose season proposals, the specific changes we're recommending. In general, the seasons in our goose management areas 3, 4, and 5, so that'd be most of western Washington is area 3. Areas 4 and 5 are the east side. Seasons similar to last year in those areas. The September seasons have already been set at the last in the April meeting, but these are referring to the October through March seasons. And then we have a few changes we're recommending for first in Area 1 on the white front bag limit, a change to the Skagit County brant season structure, and quite a few changes to the Southwest Washington goose season in Areas 2A, 2B there on in Southwest Washington. The first change, this is one of two floor changes I wanted to cover. It relates to the white fronted goose limit. We had some public input late on this issue, in that we have in Area 1, which is Skagit, Snohomish, and Island counties, we have a snow goose season that runs straight through from October 17th through January 31st. For the dark geese, which includes Canadas and white fronts, we have to split that season, because we have a September hunt and we have a youth hunt, and we can only have a maximum of 107 days in the federal framework, so we have to compensate by closing that regular season, have a split in that regular season. So the suggestion was that we allow some additional opportunity on white-fronted geese that occur in that area. We think that's a valid suggestion, and it's allowable through the federal framework, so we wanted to propose a change in the bag limits for Area 1 to include white-fronted geese along with snow geese, snow ross, and blue geese. So that'd be a straight-through season for white fronts in that area. The Canada goose would still be closed, because we have to compensate for the days in the September hunt. But the September hunt's not open for white front, so that's how it works. It 107 days per species per area. The current average for Pacific white fronts is 565,000. That population has increased dramatically over the years, and it's above our flyaway objective of 300,000. White fronts moved through our state fairly quickly in September, and but we recently have had more staying into October, November, so that's the reason we had the suggestion for this change. And on the bottom there, you can see the picture of two different kinds of white fronts that occur in our areas. The one on the right is the Thule white front, and the left is the Pacific white front. The next change I wanted to talk about is for the brant seasons, and on the graph on the upper left there shows our Skagit brant January midwinter waterfowl survey. And recently we have, for quite a while now, we've had a closure criteria in that area of 6,000 to trigger a closure in that brant season. So last year we had an emergency closure in Skagit County. We only had a count of 3,000 birds in Skagit County. And in contrast, we've had a phenomenon in Alaska during January of an increasing brant population. So if you look at the bottom graph there, back in the 80s, 90s, we had less than 10,000 brant wintering in Alaska and Eisenbeck Lagoon on the Alaska Peninsula, and now it's up to 50,000. So a big increase in those, in that wintering flock. We have suspicions but not evidence that some of our birds are now wintering in that area. So things are changing. We want to still try to provide some opportunity at lower population levels. And so we're proposing to add a very restrictive season option of 3,000 to 6,000 birds would trigger a three-day season. The current season structure is 8 days. And so this proposed restrictive season option would be at 3 to 6. We'd have a three-day season. We still feel that would be within our harvest rate targets of less than 10%. And so you can see the harvest numbers there in the graph, but typically 400 or 500 birds. Of course, none last year in Skagit County. We have about 200 active hunters in that area. Some of the bigger changes I want to talk about are for the Southwest goose season. And again, that's Area 2A and 2B. We have seven different subspecies of Canada geese in the Pacific Flyway, and pretty much all of those occur in our state. Some of them migrate through, like Aleutians. We don't have too many of those that occur in our state, but the other subspecies occur frequently in our state. Most of the big populations from Alaska in our region occur in Oregon, but we do have quite a few in our areas too. So the Western is the only one that breeds in our state. Whole different range of sizes and coloration, as you can see in the picture. The one subspecies we've been concerned about over the years is the dusky Canada goose, which breeds on the Copper River Delta in south central Alaska, and winters in southwest Washington and northwest Oregon. This population, this subspecies, was impacted by the 1964 earthquake in Alaska, and the whole delta was uplifted 6 to 8 feet, really changed the whole habitat there, increased the number of predators on the delta, and the population has never been really big. It's been maybe up to 25,000. It used to be the only subspecies of geese we had in this area in southwest Washington, western Oregon, until we got more westerns and other subspecies moving in. But duskies, you can see the numbers there, generally below 20,000. They have been increasing recently because of good production in Alaska on the Copper River Delta. And this year we had almost 18,000 duskies recorded in those areas. And that's the highest number since this survey was started in 1986. Another subspecies that occurs in our area is the cackling goose. This is the smallest subspecies of Canada goose. They all used to winter in California in the Central Valley. And were reduced to a fairly low level in the mid-80s. And due to conservation efforts in Alaska as well as the wintering grounds, we had some very, very large increases throughout the 90s. And as the population increased, it also shifted to our areas, to southwest Washington, western Oregon. So the whole population completely changed their wintering area from California to Washington, Oregon. The objective for this population is 250,000, and we're currently above that objective. We had a record count from this survey for this year. It was 339,000, so it's up 21% from 2014. I just want to give a little background on the Southwest Goose Harvest Management Program that we had in place since 1986. It was developed for the conservation of duskies for the reasons I talked about earlier. Again, for agricultural depredation control, which has become a big factor, mainly in western Oregon, but also some areas in our state, too. And we also want to provide recreational harvest, keep that as a priority for our management program. So in order to do that, we try to shift harvest away from duskies onto the other subspecies that have been increasing. We developed a subspecies identification test, which is required for all hunters that participate in the season. And they have to take the test, pass with an 80% score before they get their permit. And we had mandatory check stations. There were 5 in Washington, over 10 in Oregon. 1 dusky season limit. Once a hunter took a dusky, their permit was invalidated, and they had to take the ID test again. And so they couldn't hunt the rest of the season. They had to take the test, come back, and be able to hunt the next year. And we had area dusky quotas, which recently they weren't met, but in the past we did exceed those quotas. We had some emergency closures. In the graph there on the bottom, you can see in the early 80s, about half the harvest was duskies. And then currently, a very small percentage, about 1% to 2%, is dusky harvest based on the check stations. And this is kind of a complicated graph, but the top one there shows the overall goose harvest peaked in the late 90s, up about 4,500, but recently had been running about 2,000 birds. About 450 active hunters last year. You can see on the bottom part of the top graph there the increase in the cackler numbers. That's the solid bar on the top graph. And then on the bottom graph shows the dusky harvest levels, which are about 1 to 2% of the total harvest recently. So we've run the season structure for quite a while, since 1986. I got to say it's probably one of the most complex seasons in the country for Canada geese because of the different subspecies. It's very costly, $250,000 each year in Oregon and $85,000 in our state. It constrains the number of season days we can have. The hunting hours are fixed, and we want to provide dusky conservation, so that provides these constraints. The hunter compliance and harvest, we know we're not getting 100% of the birds checked into the check stations. In fact, there have been estimates of less than 50% in some areas. Some hunting areas are greater than 30 miles from the nearest check station. And as a result, some check stations occasionally check no hunters. There's one in Raymond that frequently has nobody checking out. Fairly low effort, but there are duskies in the area, so we had to run a check station. And it really provides disincentives for hunter participation, the way the program is structured right now. So we've been trying to look for new options for the season structure. We have an increase in the dusky population this year, which is could allow us to have consider some new options. So we have a proposal that we've developed with Oregon and the Fish and Wildlife Service. Before I leave this slide, though, I wanted to point out the map on the right. And that shows it's a combination of dusky observations and band returns. But the blue line there shows the current zone boundaries. But as you can see, there are duskies that occur in the areas outside the zone, particularly to the north there in Grays Harbor County. We've had band returns up and down the Chehalis Valley. Flock observations and satellite marked birds have been occurring in that area. So I'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about the changes. So our objectives with the new proposal are to, again, maintain the dusky Canada goose abundance, distribution, and winter survival. Maximize the length and timing of the goose season to address depredation concerns, reduce the agency costs, as well as complexity and the hunter reporting requirements. We have developed a proposal here present in your notebook to add additional general season days. The general season ending dates would be extended to March for all the areas. Currently, we just had a late season in February and March, just in Region 5, for master hunter. So that would be discontinued for Region 5 and 6. Both the areas we'd have, the general season would extend to March 9th. So that's going to be a big benefit for agricultural depredation. A lot of their concerns are in the spring, right when their crops are coming up and the geese are in their without a hunting season, so this will allow some more harassment and hazing through March 9th. There are some concerns on depredation after that time. We don't have an option to go past March 10th in the federal framework. In addition, the hunting hours were extended. As I mentioned, we had to tie the hunting hours of the check station hours, so hunting hours 8 to 4, they were fixed. In the new proposal, they would start 30 minutes after the start of official hunting hours and end 30 minutes before the end of official hunting hours. So we would have no check stations or daily recording of harvest. The area boundaries would be changed to include all of Clark County. There's just a small portion of Clark County that's not in the current zone, but there are some duskies that occur there, and also Grays Harbor County. We'd like to include that back in the zone because of increased numbers of duskies in that area. And the biggest change is a closed season for dusky Canada geese. So that's a major change. Last year, hunters were allowed one dusky per season, although if they took a dusky, they'd have their permit revoked. We'd still retain that permit revocation, even with the closed season, but it would be a violation for taking a dusky. We had five check stations last year. We would convert three of those positions that staff those check stations to field checkers and assistants for enforcement. So I really think this will increase our enforcement efforts. We'll have more eyes and presence out in the field and be able to direct enforcement to where the duskies are and to where the potential violations are. And we'll have those people be available to ride with enforcement to help with the classifications.
Don, just a quick question.
Yeah.
Do the duskies only show up, are they in all flyways or just on the Pacific?
Just in the Pacific.
Okay.
Primarily in this zone, we do get some that are in British Columbia and occasionally in migration in other areas of our state when they're coming through.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This is another floor change I wanted to present, and this just came up in the last week, and that we heard from Oregon that they're unable to implement new testing for all their hunters. We had proposed to have all of our hunters go through a new identification test and then have to get new certification, and primarily just so they would be aware of all these changes before they got their permit. They'd have to, you know, it would kind of force them to, you know, to look at it, and then before they got their permit. Nothing's really changed on the identification materials. So, but Oregon told us that they're not able to implement tests for their hunters, and we may have similar problems through our licensing system and getting all the hunters inactivated. So the Fish and Wildlife Service recently approved the elimination of that requirement for new testing for all the hunters. Oregon has about 15,000 hunters. They would have to run through their tests. We have about 5,000. So as an alternative, we would like to do a direct mailing or an email to all the hunters that we have on file to let them know about the new requirements, to encourage them to look at the video and the testing materials again so that they're sure of their targets. We feel that we've done a pretty good job, though, in training over the years. We've had, you know, pretty good training materials, and I think that based on our harvest information that people are able to distinguish the birds now. So we'd like to propose a floor change for page 9 to go back to the system that's been in place in the past where the new hunters and those who didn't maintain a valid authorization last year, so these are people that took duskies last year, they have to review the goose ID materials and then pass the test again with an 80% to get their authorization. This is another floor change, and it's primarily to clarify the authority for non-enforcement personnel to collect information and continue a penalty we had in place for non-compliance. On page 10, this is the new language that would be included in the WAC, in that it would be unlawful for hunters and goose management areas 2A and 2B to fail to comply with the directions of an authorized department personnel related to the collection of goose subspecies information pursuant to RCW 7712071, and a person who prevents department personnel from collecting samples of tissue or other bodily parts is subject to prosecution under RCW 7715360, unlawful interfering in department operations penalty. And we got this, this language was provided by enforcement and reviewed also by the AG's office. And then as far as the penalty there, the second part is if a hunter takes a dusky Canada goose or does not comply with the requirements regarding collection of subspecies information, the authorization will be invalidated by the department. So that continues we had a penalty before that if hunters didn't go to a check station, they'd have their permit invalidated so we can collect the biological information. That's the intent, and this continues on that, the penalty for non-compliance. The next one is an adjustment, which is in your packet, to remove reference to the late goose season, which wouldn't exist anymore, and also to specify penalties for taking a dusky Canada goose and other violations. Currently, under the system right now, for a closed season, it's a misdemeanor penalty, a misdemeanor for taking a bird under a closed season. This would change that to an infraction for taking one dusky Canada goose under RCW 7715-160. And then other violations of the Area 2 or 2B goose hunting rules are punishable as an infraction or as a misdemeanor or gross misdemeanor under 7715-400, depending on the circumstances of the violation. So this would be provide discretion as far as and lessen the penalty for taking one dusky Canada goose from a misdemeanor down to an infraction. That'd be similar to Oregon. That's all I had on that whack, and I'd like to move into the next one for consideration, unless there are any questions now on that one. But this the next whack relates to
Commissioner Thornburg.
Just out of curiosity, there's not a goldeneye hunt in eastern Washington.
Sorry,
is there not a goldeneye hunt in eastern Washington?
Yeah, there goldeneyes are part of the general duck bag limit there.
They are. Oh, because okay. Mm-hmm. So is it both species?
It's they're common and barrows occur there, yeah. And they you could take seven.
Okay, thank you.
The next whack for consideration relates to the one I just covered, and it's primarily for the southwest goose season. As I mentioned, we want to change the hunting hours from 8 to 4 p.m. to the 30 minutes after the start of official hunting hours to 30 minutes before the end. And in order to do that, we needed to change the hunting hours whack to specify that in the whack as an exception. And also, the changes in this WAC, we wanted to be specific since we're having the general season extended to March 10th. That's the latest framework date. Extend all the hunting hours tables to March 10th. So those are the changes that we made in the WAC. But as we went through, we had some errors in the date and times, particularly. It gets complicated when you get into February, March, because you're dealing with leap years. You're dealing with daylight savings time changes. So there were some changes, and so everything's accurate now. But there are quite a few minor changes there on those tables for 232-12-289.
Don, Commissioner Carpenter's got a question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don. This, as I recall, is based on depredation needs.
Sorry?
This hunting framework here is in place for depredation, crop damages?
For southwest Washington?
Yes.
Right.
Right.
And
why? Yeah. I guess my question is, why are we not starting on the regular hunting hours and closing on the regular hunting hours instead of a half hour short on either side? I just don't know why that's the case.
Okay.
And
Well, in the past, we had hunting hours of 8 to 4, and that was partially because of the check station needs, but also to provide better light for identification. You know, some of the differences in the geese are pretty subtle, so we want to provide that kind of a buffer to allow better light conditions in the morning and then in the evening to, so the hunters aren't, kind of required to have good light conditions before they have to make those choices. Still difficult in a lot of weather conditions.
Yeah.
Obviously, even bright sun is tough.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And then any questions on any other questions before I move on to the next is a game reserve repeal?
Any questions from commissioners? No.
Okay. So the next action would be a repeal of the Hayton Game Reserve, WAC 232-16-790. This game reserve is on Fur Island in Skagit County. It's right next to the Fur Island Farms Reserve Unit. They're shown on the map. It's Hayton Game Reserve is private land. The Fur Island Farms is the area that's currently just this summer being under construction for a restoration project. Not really related to this action, but just for information. We had when the WAC was established, the game reserve was established in 1997. There was a farming lease agreement between Hayton Farms and our department, and was in place to 2014. And the agreement provided winter forage for snow geese by planting cover crops on both on our Fur Island Farms game reserve as well as the Hayton Reserve. In this year, since our last action to look at all the game reserves, we had awarded the farming lease for Fur Island Farms to another contractor. And so the agreement to keep the lands in the game reserve status at Hayton is no longer active. And the landowner requested that we take the area out of reserve. And that led to our proposal to repeal the Hayton Game Reserve. That's all I had on that one.
Did you want to say anything?
No.
Okay. Questions? That's it?
Yep.
Well, I do have one question, if I may. Don, I've been contacted by some waterfowl hunters up in the Skagit Basin concerning South Padilla Bay and a Brant Reserve, or Brant. I'm not totally familiar with that, but their concern was that in the pamphlet it's going to be, I assume, spelled out in verbiage and not with a map of that reserve, so people could have some really distinct knowledge of where it is, and you know, people going out at 4 o'clock in the morning trying to figure out what latitude longitude is probably going to be pretty tough. So it was a recommendation that that be done if possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a tough one. It's in an intertidal area, and we've tried to use where we can, you know, landmarks on some of the islands, put up signs, but we've had to maintain a lot of the area with floats.
Yeah.
And you know, those tend to go missing after a while sometimes, and that's why we went to the latitude longitude in the WAC, that if a float was missing, they'd have that at least to go by. But we try to maintain those floats as well as best as we can.
The assumption there is everybody out there has a GPS and some don't. Is it too late to put a map in the pamphlet or some kind of a reference?
We have the WAC language specified in the pamphlet, and we're working right now actually to have all the game reserve maps online, and then also put into Go Hunt. So that's commitment we made to the Trappers Association and others to get that information out there and more explicit on the website. So that's
I'll share that with him. Thank
okay.
you.
Yeah.
A tangential question: does the department do have an active banding program?
Yes, we do. We ban quite a few mallards each year, up to 1,000, and about 1,000 Canada geese, mourning doves too, as part of our management programs. So,
do we partner with any? I was thinking 4-H's or groups to help participate in the banding program?
We use a lot of volunteers in our programs, definitely. That's especially for a Canada goose banding in June, and where we can for mallards and mourning doves. When we banded sea ducks about 10 years ago, we had quite a few volunteers on in that program too.
Yeah, maybe this is just a subject for another time, but I think that's always a great opportunity to get young people hooked.
Definitely, yes.
You know, into wildlife.
Yes.
So I there could be some opportunities that I used to do out in the Maritimes of Canada, and I remember that was part of we could share. But thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have some public input. We have 4 or 5, and for those of you that haven't done this before, 3 minutes, beeper, and then the hook comes out and you get jerked off the stage. So most of you have been doing this for a long time. So I'll call you up two at a time. Ben Welton and Kurt Schneider, please.
All get to talk at the same time.
No. Only if you're very good friends.
Have all of you got one of these?
I'll hand it out.
Got them?
It'll be handed out.
Oh, well, this is what I'm going to use for a briefing with you. My name is Ben Welton. I'm the current chairman for the Waterfowl Advisory Group. We're meeting twice a year now. Today I want to talk about Brant in Skagit County. I won't deal with Pacific County because it's a different stock and it's not in trouble. Pacific County holds their wintering population very stable over many years. In Skagit County in 2015, the season length was 8 days, a daily limit of 2 brant, and a possession limit of 6. Also, Skagit County preseason count of brant has to exceed 6,000 before we have a season. We didn't make it this past season, and the season was canceled in Skagit County. The Waterfowl Advisory Group proposal for Skagit County is a season length of 8 or 10 days plus or minus, whatever the department picks, a daily limit of 2, a season limit of 6 birds. Possession limit remain the same, 6 birds. On the bottom here, we say the reason for the proposal. Brant season in the state of Washington is probably the smallest hunting bird resource there is. There are not a great deal of brant hunters in numbers. Many people hold a permit for it. Damn few go on the water. This is not a hunt that you can do from land. Predominantly, it's a boat hunt. We've had a declining number of wintering birds these past few years. Eisenbeck Bay, one national wildlife refuge on the Aleutian Chain in Alaska, is now wintering about 42% to 44% of the total population. This isn't due to mismanagement, and this isn't due to over-harvest. It's due to the environment, folks. There's a safety factor involved in brant hunting. If you don't have a decent boat, you will not go on Padilla Bay with 25 or 30 knot winds. Last season that we were allowed to hunt, I pulled one person out of a boat that was full of water, and I also towed one to the beach. They just weren't prepared for what happens there. It's a shallow bay. The wind blows, the water only goes up. If you're not running that bay a lot, it's got some very strange currents, very similar to the shallow bay in Willapa. I think that it would allow increased harvest management. If we have a card to fill out for each date that we took a brant and returned that to the department, they'll have that.
Did you hear the buzz?
The proposal was presented to the WAG.
You can finish your sentence, but yeah.
The proposal was presented to the WAG, and it passed unanimously, and we would like to see that brought into review for the 2016-17 season. It's too late for this year.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm out of time. I got one more thing I would like to say about it.
10 seconds. Go.
Okay. All right. The thing about electronic devices for waterfowling, decoy sets and whatnot, was brought up, and nobody wanted to make a motion on anything. Basically, the WAG has been against electronic devices in waterfowling for years. That's it.
Roboducks.
Pardon me?
Roboducks.
Yeah, amongst other things.
Thank you.
Not all of the WAC commission opposed that, by the way.
All right. Calling up Steve and Kurt.
Can I go?
Yep.
Start the clock. My name is Kurt Snyder. I'm the chairman of the Grays Harbor chapter of the Washington Waterfowl Association. My subject is the requirement to buy a sea duck permit in order to harvest goldeneye in western Washington. I can't find any hunters that do not oppose it. My chapter opposes it. Goldeneye have been lumped in with sea duck, and now a hunter has to pay for that permit to harvest a goldeneye anywhere in the state. Many of them don't hunt sea duck. I personally buy the permit every year because I'm a sea duck hunter. But a lot of the people I hunt with can't legally harvest one without that permit. And it's the general feeling that they're just kind of being extorted. Sure, it's only $12 and change, but with all the other stuff you have to buy, the opposition is growing on that. We believe the goldeneye should be taken off as a sea duck. They're found in every flyaway. They're more common in eastern Washington, especially the barrows, according to our accounts, than they are in western Washington. We see the need for conservation for those, and the limit's been set at 2 from 7, which is fine from conservatory opinion, but we believe that this permit shouldn't be required for somebody that's not going to sea duck hunt. Bottom line, we've got several chapter members. I can't get anybody on the WAG interested in sounding off on this, so that's why I'm here today. I probably should have brought this up to Don long before this, but I'm a busy guy, and I went through the WAG and can't get any satisfaction there. My second opposition here is the Willapa Bay eelgrass, the killing of the Willapa Bay eelgrass. It's becoming widespread. And I believe that the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission needs to get a little more involved in controlling the kill of that eelgrass. It's extended beyond, way beyond the oyster beds. And brant, our wintering brant, are fully dependent on this eelgrass. And there's several areas in southern Willapa Bay that are just a desert. It's muck, no more brant. If we're concerned about these brant, we need to take a control over the Department of Ecology and get with them and start regulating the spraying of this. It's a widespread thing. There needs to be a little more control, probably a lot more control, and there's several other people dealing with it, but I thought I'd take the opportunity to mention it today, that our chapter's taken on this subject and we're going to be getting quite involved more and more as our chapter grows. Right now we have 64 members, and I expect to be by over 100 by the end of this year. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Mr. Wecker.
Being from Willapa Bay, I would invite you to check your facts. My understanding is that the treatment of japonica, the invasive, the non-native, in many people's view, the invasive eelgrass is in an experimental phase. It's not being done widely, and the only proposal that's on the table would support the oyster industry in their clam production in specified areas of the bay.
Right.
So I'm not sure that your facts...
Have you visited the South Bay at low tide?
Yes, that's where I live.
There's no more eelgrass. No more brant down there. It's a mud flat. Total mud flat.
Sure,
there used to be lots
eelgrass?
Back 40 years ago when I hunted it, there was a lot of eelgrass down there. Now,
are you talking about Spartina or eelgrass?
Yeah, the two types, both types.
Because Spartina is not an eelgrass. But I invite you to check your facts,
right. And
I'd be happy for the commission to
hear
the eelgrass
more. Eelgrass is being killed. The eelgrass is being taken out. It's
very
being pulled.
Amount.
It's being sprayed. It's hard to spray without control. Do you know Ross Barker's?
Yes,
are you
very well.
Familiar with him, a landowner down there? Him and I have been having a lot of discussions on the eelgrass situation.
I know. Again, check the facts.
So the commission is getting involved in the control of that, then. They are. Are you telling me that the Wildlife Commission is getting involved in that?
No, I just said that I wouldn't mind if the commission were informed about it. But no, we've never looked at the issue. We have we don't particularly have a role in approving. That's a Department of Ecology.
Well, we need to look at that from a conservatory standpoint for the waterfowl, wintering waterfowl, the brant mainly. I don't know why the brant counts are down.
Geographs, there's a lot of it up where I live, and it's important for a lot of other critters, more so than just brant. I mean, juvenile fish of many, many kinds, crab.
That's right.
It's a real important issue. So you raise a question that I was unaware of, that we're killing eelgrass. So I guess I'm going to ask to hear more about it in the near future.
It is being sprayed. It wasn't just the Spartina spray. That did get some opposition, but the Spartina itself doesn't really affect the waterfowl as much as that eelgrass does. They need that eelgrass. And there's areas now that are bare. Talk to Ross Barkhurst. He's the expert on it. He's testified. We got the spraying of a chemical that was meant for that was to kill the sand shrimp, and it turned out that the Department of Ecology pulled that for the wrong reasons, but they did it, and that's good. Now the eelgrass, there's a lot less of it now than there used to be.
Thank you, Kurt.
I've been there for 40 years, so thank you very much for hearing me.
You're loud and clear there. Thank you. Calling up Louis Farrar, please. And Steve, it's your turn.
Steve Gray, a lifelong resident in Willapaw Bay. Great job on removal of the Spartina. Helped the waterfowl a lot. Very good job. And the oyster industry involved with some of that. They drag some of the eelgrass and cut it. They have for my 70 years. I've never seen it any different. But that's where that is. They should have done something with the shrimp thing. There was enough science behind that. It was very sad that that's gotten dropped. My main thing for you is, I'm getting old. I probably can't remember when the last time I took my wife out to dinner. But I can tell you exactly where I went, if you would. I can tell you exactly where I was when I was 8 years old when I shot my first duck. Hunting is very important to me. 10 of us own a piece of property right next to the Willapaw Ricola Wildlife Station. Hundreds of acres. It's called Honkers Incorporated. I'm tickled to death with Don Craigie's proposals. You don't hear that from me very often, I know that. But very good job. Some of the things that I think are important are kids. Seeing the season change from 2 days to 3 days for geese, good idea. There was some discussion in our club group about, was it going to be Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, which it probably will be. We can get our kids out on Sunday. They're on school. Maybe we should have gone to Monday because then you got a day off and geese will have a chance to come in and so forth. I think personally, and I've got a lot of kids, I think it's important to get the kids out, so I think Sunday is a good part for the addition. The longer season, good idea. Predation problem, I think I'm getting too old for the things I do. I also own a bunch of Ocean Spray cranberry land. In the cranberry business, we get a little girdler, and we flood the fields to try and eradicate that girdler. We do that after harvest, so we do that later in the season. And it gets to be a real problem when goose season has closed early for us, and all of a sudden you got fields flooded, and those geese get in there, and they start feeding on the bottom, and then you got potholes all through the field. So, and the geese get in there. We all know what kind of a mess they make on a golf course. Parks, we have the same problem in our cranberry fields. So we appreciate the length of the season. We appreciate any more effort we can put to it. Very good for our area. One of the things that I think was a great important change here is when Don said we're going to change the starting hunting hours. Used to be when we got to daylight savings times, if we were about 30 minutes behind, 8 o'clock being about 30 minutes behind, we'll say at the time of daylight, we would have to sit for another hour. So you'd sit there for an hour and a half of daylight. All the geese come, land on your decoys. You get up and chase them out because there's no fun to shoot them on the ground. They go out to the bay. They don't come back. So you think, well, that was a waste of day. So that's a very good adjustment. I don't mind. Larry had a good question. Why don't we go at regular duck time? The daylight, a half an hour more daylight, is a good thing. You can pick out what color is who. When we hunt ducks, two hen mallards, The third one, you're going to get a ticket. I'm only going to guess $100, $150 bucks. Same with two pintails. The third one, you will get a ticket. I'm going to suggest that we do the same thing if somebody shoots a dusky. If there's an enforcement officer there and they land in your land and you got a good look at them and you shoot, boom, you just openly shoot them, you probably deserve something more strict. But I think a $100, $150 ticket if someone inadvertently shoots one like the mallards or those is probably applicable. Anyway, that's a good job on where we are. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions on any of that?
Questions? Yeah. Thank you, Steve. And Jay Gordon, please.
Hello, my name is Louis Ferrar. I live in Grays Harbor County, and I live in what you would call the eastern half of the county, which is up the Chehalis Valley. And probably 80% of the farming that is in Grays Harbor is in that part of the Chehalis Valley. And I've lived there my whole life and probably started hunting. I've hunted ducks there for 50-some years. But the geese population, when it started rising, I started hunting geese there about 12 years ago. And on the farmer end of it, the damage that the geese are doing now in that Chehalis Valley, the upper end of the Chehalis Valley, not along the coast, is remarkable what birds are there now. Some weekends, some weeks, there's up to 8,000 birds in a 10-mile distance in that region. And I guess what it is that we are going to get cut down, I think it's 3 days a week now as far as the hunting is concerned. And I know farmers there that have personally had to go in. One farmer I hunt on his place, that he personally had to go back in and completely replant 80 acres of new seedling because of the geese damage. I know another farmer in that upper valley that actually hires a federal hunter to come in to keep the geese off his hay fields, which he harvests 10 to 15,000 squares a year. That's his whole livelihood, to keep them geese off that grass. And the critical month for these farmers, October, really doesn't affect these farmers. And if you got goose days, the goose days, as far as I'm concerned, should be taken out of October. It don't mean nothing to these farmers, October. It's the critical months is February and March is when that grass is wanting to start to grow. And there's days you can drive up that valley. And 3 years ago, all I ever used to kill in that valley was the Westerners. And all of a sudden, I call them the little guys, the cacklers and the lessers showed up approximately 3 years ago. And now we have not killed a Westerner in two seasons because they literally run them out of I'm just talking that 10-mile radius. I drive the road 3 to 4 days a week scouting geese from, say, the Brady Flats to Porter, looking for the geese and what they're doing. And they have literally ran the Westerns out of the valley because they won't compete against them. If you get there early enough in the morning, you'll see the Westerners flying up the Sassup River, or they'll go up the Wainuchi drains to get up in them upper fields where them smaller geese come up that Chehalis River. And the critical months for these farmers is that February time, if we have a warm February, where that grass is just starting to grow, and them geese go in there and eat them clippings. Because you got to remember that those geese eat a lot of grass, and they devastate them guys that put up for silage and square bales. And I just would rather see the October gone and slide it into March, but I guess the feds must have a February or March 10th deal, because that is a devastating month, and it's really hurting them farmers down there big time.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jay Gordon. I am one of those farmers in the Chehalis. And for the record, I'll also be testifying today as the policy director for the Washington State Dairy Federation. My family's farmed that land since the 1870s, and I'm going to talk both as a farmer and also as a representative of the dairy farmers in the state of Washington. First of all, I want to say thanks to Don. We talked to Don a lot last fall about some changes. I see some of those incorporated, and I want to thank you very much for incorporating some of those. I think I have four main points I'll make very quickly. I don't think we went far enough. We were really asking for a season extension also in Skagit, Snohomish, and Whatcom. The habitat that we, when you see those birds that are increasing in population, we're feeding them. I'm one of the farmers that have had to replant fields. It depends on the year. It depends on the flooding. I've hosted as many as 685 trumpeters on my farm, which is about 5% of the world's population. I'm one of the guys that has probably a quarter of those 8,000 to 10,000 geese. You look out my farm window and some days in February, and it looks like a manure spill in my fields because the geese are so thick that it's just a brown blob. They will rototill 2 to 3 acres a day. In Skagit and Whatcom, it's worse. We have lost a lot of habitat in Whatcom because of berry fields. And so now the birds are being pushed down onto my farmers in Snohomish and Skagit. We're housing huge amounts of trumpeters, snow geese, white fronts. We just call them flying white air rats. The populations are being pushed onto less and less farmland, and we're feeding them. And it costs me, literally, it's costing all of us dairymen our first cutting of grass. It's gone. They're eating it. So I applaud the change in the season. I really want to look next year at moving that into the Whatcom and the Puget Sound Basin. There's point number one. Point number two, which is extend and expand the seasons. I think we need a bigger kill. Second point, expanding the seasons also gives us as landowners some benefits. I have a duck hunter behind me that I lease my ground to. They offer good money for leasing our ground. But what we talked to Don about was give us those seasons outside the normal range so that as a landowner I can say that my lease, sorry Barry, don't choke, my lease only includes the regular season. Let us have it open to the public in those early seasons and those late seasons. What a better time to have a kid come out and learn how to hunt geese when it's nice in September, nice in March, it's a warm day, and we really don't care if the kids hit the birds or not. We just want them to shoot at them. Let us have those late season hunts so that we can tell the guys that we lease our ground to, hey, you got October to January, but let us have this open to the public or open to those youth or open to those new hunters to come in and just work the birds. 3 days a week is great. Just work those birds a little bit to let our grass grow. Final point is I would like to offer to have you guys come and do a tour, especially in Skagit and Snohomish in February, to see what our fields look like. They look like this table with turds on it. It's all we've got. That's what our hay fields and our grass fields look like. We don't mind feeding these birds, but oh my gosh, it's killing us. Thank you. Any questions? Be glad to answer.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know. I guess I'll address it to you or to Don. I live in Skagit County, pretty much lifelong resident there, so I'm quite familiar with what flies over my house all the time. You know, there are some people up in our valley that use propane cannons to keep them out. Is that something, Don, that's viable for these farmers? Or?
Yeah, that's an allowable way to hay, or other ways of harassing geese. Because
I know there's a farm 3/4 mile from my house that has one going off pretty regularly and keeping the waterfowl out of there. I don't know if that's something you thought about or want to consider or try. But I do like the idea of getting kids out there, you know, because I'm sympathetic to all sides of that argument.
My wife's not real wild about waking up every morning to a 12-gauge Magnum, so she's really happy when season ends. I don't know what she would say to a propane cannon. We're being forced to that point, and it's sad. And, you know, I work a lot with Martha Jordan at the Swan Society, and she gets real concerned when we're not only hazing snow geese but also hazing her trumpeters. Martha can be a little passionate about
yes.
that.
We have a few of them in Skagit Valley, I'll tell you.
I'm from Whatcom County, so I know that the shift from dairy to berry, and I've not seen, though, I don't think, just how many acres have transitioned, but I know it's significant.
Estimates are 4,000 to 5,000, and I know in the swan surveys there's been a huge shift to the swan population to Skagit, Snohomish, southwest Washington a little bit. We've got some new habitat in Snohomish, but it's being overwhelmed.
Good points. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the public input, and this is a decision. Yes, I'm sorry.
I would like to follow up on that.
I'm sorry, I didn't, Commissioner.
To Don, the Goldeneye question. So why is there the western limitation? Western Wild.
It's focused on Barrow's Goldeneye and Puget Sound, which have a low population level, mm-hmm. and it had been declining. So that's the reason it got included in the CDEC permit, which it applies to the whole zone of Western Washington. Although the main concern is Puget Sound.
Is that a state requirement, or is it part of the federal framework?
It's a state requirement.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? Any discussion before we entertain the motion? Seeing none, ready for a motion?
I'll make a motion. I move to amend WAC 232, 28, 436, 2015-16 migratory waterfowl seasons and regulations, and WAC 232, 12, 289, official hunting hours for game birds, migratory game birds, upland birds, and wild turkeys as proposed, and repeal WAC 232, 16, 790, Hayton Game Reserve.
Thank you. The motion's been made. We have a second to the motion?
I second.
Commissioner Wecker second it. Any further discussion on the motion?
We need to clarify that the floor changes are included.
Okay. So done. Thank you. Okay. Seeing any other further discussion, we'll take a vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. Fine. Motion passes. Thank you. Before you skip out, I just wanted to. No, not now. After we're done, just. I got this banding thing going on here, so I just. I see a link with the duck clubs around the state too, and I don't. You know, I'm just. I don't want to create more work, but. I want. I see bonding and banding.
Bonding and banding.